Susie Banyan decided to perfect her ballet studies in the most famous school of dance in Europe. She chose the celebrated Academy of Fribourg. One day at 9 in the morning, she left Kennedy Airport, New York, and arrived in Germany at 10:40 p.m. local time.
Secret! I saw behind the door! Three irises! Turn the blue on! You wouldn't understand. It all seems so absurd. So fantastic. All I can do is get away from here as soon as possible.
Susie. Sarah. I once read that names which begin with the letter S are the names of snakes.
Do you believe in the existence of witches?
I have known some women who are said to be witches.
Really?
I've studied the phenomenon for a long time. I'm of the opinion that it is an important appendage of contemporary psychiatry.
I lived in one of the guest rooms. Once at the top of the stairs. One night, I had someone come in very late and get into bed in the room next to mine. And then I heard this weird snoring.
You're going to meet death now. The living dead.
Hi people, this is Johnny, Giovanni Lombardo Radice from Stage Fright, and you are listening to the Hysteria Continues.
And indeed you are. Welcome back to the Hysteria Continues, episode 118. And we are going to be visiting Germany today. Eric's got his ballet pumps on and his leotard, haven't you, Eric?
I do, and I look so absurd, yet so fantastic.
I can imagine. Can you pirouette?
Yeah, I can do a plié as well.
Oh, what's that?
I don't know.
Okay. What about you?
It is a ballet move. But is I don't it?
Know what... Okay. You know more about ballet than I do, Eric.
I don't know. But you're quite the expert.
I know nothing about ballet, actually, but...
A Spandau Ballet, I know about.
Well,
do you want me to talk to you about Spandau Ballet? Well, their first single came out in 1980. It was called To Cut a Long Story Short, and it was really good. And this was followed by The Freeze, which didn't chart quite as high. Okay, I'll stop now.
Yes, thank you. Thank you. Joseph, how are you doing? Well, thank you. And,
and you're quite welcome.
I take it that was the Suspiria theme music.
That was my throaty rendition of it.
Gosh, well, very good it was too. And Nathan, how are you doing?
No. Oh,
yeah, that's right. There's no Nathan this time. Nathan is away. He is away meeting horror stars at a horror film convention. And so he can't join us. He's going to join us. He's going to send in his thoughts. We'll come to that a little bit later. We're doing this again. This is a little bit of I don't know how we describe it. It's one of our time travel shows because we're actually releasing this after the Maniac show, but we're recording it 2 weeks or a week earlier than that show. So if things get confusing, then that's why.
But, I'm confused already.
Yes,
who am I?
I don't know. I don't know, Eric. But we are covering Argento's 1977 shocker, Suspiria, which was another listener choice, wasn't it? Did someone take note of who it was?
Yes, that was Mike Alishan, or was it Ara? One of the Alishan brothers.
One of the Alishan brothers. Well, thank you for choosing this. As I think I probably said a number of times, it's my sort of favorite movie up there with Halloween, the original Halloween, not the Rob Zombie version, obviously.
Suspiria is Mike Alishan.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, I can't wait till Rob Zombie remakes Suspiria.
I know, it'd be brilliant.
It could happen. And in fact, actually, there is a remake on the cards, isn't there? And we'll talk about that shortly.
Yes.
Quite a torturous kind of sort of...
But an amazing cast, if you're into highbrow actors, that is.
Yes, it's going to be... Well, it could be interesting. We'll see. We'll talk a little bit about that later and what we think about that. But also... discuss.
I think it's absurd. It's fantastic.
I can see you getting lots of mileage out of that. And of course, the other thing we have to talk about is, well, we'll talk about that a little bit later, because I have a theory about Suspiria and the Susie battling the old witch at the end.
Oh, I hate you. I hate you already.
I was watching that last night and that actually popped into my head.
Well, it didn't pop into my head.
So we'll
Justin,
come on to
Joseph. I heard that boys whose names begin with J are jackasses.
Thank you, Eric.
Boy, Eric is in rare form today.
He is. Nathan's going to be.
Well, you brought up the Susie Toya thing again, and it just riled me up.
Well, it had to be done, Eric, didn't it?
Well, it wasn't obvious to me.
Really?
No.
Well,
Eric, I'm just going to say, you know, you might need a little bit of an anger management. You should get some of those books on tape. There's a torrent available.
Ha 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 ha. If only you heard the conversation I had with Justin while we were waiting for you to come online.
Yeah, I didn't hear that. Did you record it, Justin?
I don't think I did, actually.
Damn. Obviously not.
No. I apologize, but no, nothing bad was said about you, Joseph, was it?
No, it was about acquiring films, was what was said.
Yes, from HMV and Virgin Megastores.
Neither of which exist. Well, HMV do, kind of, but...
Yeah. Okay, well, before we go down that dirty old road again... let's talk about what we've been watching recently. So it's only been, has it been a week since we recorded, or is it 2 weeks?
Yes, a week, one week.
So, Eric, I'm going to ask you, even though I know you haven't watched anything.
Yeah. No. Well, I have. Recently? I've watched Suspiria, obviously, and I watched Inferno and Mother of Tears, but we'll probably talk about them later. So, no, okay. I haven't seen anything else.
Okay, right. Well, thank you. Joseph, how about you?
Yeah, I watched a movie called Christie with a K. It's basically... one of those home invasion films, but you know, this time set at a college campus. And I think if you had seen this before, you'd seen something like You're Next or F, two films that do this formula a lot better, you'd probably like this film a little more. You know, as it stands, I thought it was just kind of okay. It's kind of been there, done that. I will give it, you know, props for some amazing direction. And I like, you know, movies where the final girl just kind of becomes a badass at the very end and just, you know, does away with her tormentors. But I don't know. For one, I found the reasoning behind the villain's killing spree just kind of silly. It really just is kind of redundant. And I didn't buy a lot of the, I guess you'd call them decisions that... the lead girl made, or especially her friends that find themselves tormented. I don't know, just kind of been there, done that. I don't want to say I don't recommend it or I do, so it's just kind of middle of the road. It's called Christie with a K, if you've heard of it. It's on Netflix.
Okay, yeah, no, I've not. I think you mentioned it before, didn't you? I've seen you sort of talk about it. I currently can't view American Netflix. Eric, have you tried recently?
The last time I checked, I could. Yeah, now I use a VPN piece of software because I'm not clever enough to do it manually. So I use one called Tunnel Bear, obviously.
And
it still seems to work for me. Now I do have to pay a subscription every year to Tunnel Bear, but it's worth it because I can get the BBC iPlayer then as well.
Okay, yeah. Anyway, enough of your illegality, Eric.
It's not that illegal.
Because I wouldn't do something as illegal as that.
You just said you did.
No, it's an entrapment, Eric. I was trapping you. So the long arm of the law will be coming out to finger you later, young man. So, anyway, let's move away from the arch criminal that is Eric. Joseph, have you seen anything else?
No, that's it for this week, considering it's only been a week. I did watch a movie called Suspiria.
Okay, I've heard that's good.
Well, I'll let you know in a little while.
Okay, thank you. Well, actually, I watched quite a lot this week, I think. I caught up with a film called Nothing But the Night from 1973, which stars Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing, and about mysterious murders of, what are made to look like suicides of trustees of an orphanage on a remote Scottish island. And they're being bumped off in strange ways by someone with black leather gloves, which, of course, 1973 was the height of the giallo. It's not really a giallo, but it's kind of obviously playing off those riffs. It also stars Diana Dawes in her full-on frumpy kind of character actress, because if you know, Diana Dawes was kind of the Britain's answer to Marilyn Monroe and Jane Mansfield and Mamie Van Doren, but she... in the 70s and the late 60s, she kind of put on a lot of weight and just kind of played kind of, for want of a better term, kind of old bag roles with gusto. In this, she plays a kind of ex-prostitute who's trying to get to a daughter, and she's being chased by the police across the island, and she looks exactly like Divine. Is it Female Trouble when she's being, she's kind of running away. So it's just kind of really, but she does it, really well. I really like Diana Dawes. But I won't give away the twist, because it was actually one that has been done a lot since, but it's done pretty well in this. Have either of you seen that?
No.
Can't say that I've seen it.
Okay. No, it's good. It's definitely worth watching. The other, I can't remember. Did I mention watching House on Straw Hill or Expose?
No. I don't think so.
No, because we watched that, which is one of the kind of, one of the only British films on the Video Nasties list. It's set in, I think it's in the mid-70s, and it was called, released in the States as House on Straw Hill and in the UK as Expose. And it stars Udo Kier as a writer who is in a remote cottage, and he's joined by Linda Hayden, who was in Blood and Satan's Claw and various other films, and also Fiona, what was her name? I can't remember the name now.
Is it Fullerton? No, Fiona Shaw?
Flanagan? no, there is a Fiona or Fanola Flanagan or something like that.
No, it's what's it? House on Straw Hill. Let's have a look.
I'll have a look here. You keep talking.
Yeah. Well, anyway, it's kind of it's full of kind of intrigue and murder. And again, it could be loosely termed as a slasher movie, because there's a number of very gory deaths. I mean, it was very highly censored, but I think the version I was watching was the one. I'm not sure who put it out in the States, but it was almost completely uncensored.
Fiona Richmond.
Fiona Richmond, that's right. She was the UK's top sex star in the 1970s, although she looks like Steptoe. have you seen a photo of her? If you Google her...
This is recently or in
well, in, back then, she wasn't... I think it must be because she...
Because I have the same Blu-ray I got recently, the House on Straw Hill one, and I didn't notice that.
All right. Well, no, she's just kind of not... I wouldn't exactly say she's... I mean, Linda Hayden's much sort of more attractive, to me anyway.
All right, yeah, no, I see what you mean now.
Yeah. but in the film, Linda Hayden spends most of the film with her hands down her knickers. She's a typist, but she just kind of...
She does other typing.
She does a lot of typing in that film. But you've seen that, haven't you, Eric? What did you think?
Yes, I quite like it, yeah. I mean, I first time I saw it was when I bought the Blu-ray. Yes, I bought the Blu-ray. Go on, make your jokes. Last year. But I've been aware of the film for so long because, as you said, it had been a Video Nasty. And it kind of was what I expected. It's House on... It's Straw Dogs, sorry, kind of done English-styly.
Yes. So. Well, Straw Dogs was English, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Straw Dogs done even more English-styly.
Yeah.
And with that nice man in it.
Udo Kier.
No, Brushstrokes guy.
Oh, right. Cole.
Carl Howman.
Yes. Okay. Have you seen that, Joseph?
Yeah, I saw that ages ago. I actually don't really remember much about it, so I need to watch it again.
It's just kind of, I mean, Udo Kier in one of his kind of, again, he puts on latex gloves to have sex, and there's all sorts of weird kinks in it. But that was fun to see that projected onto our kitchen wall on big screen. I do wonder what the neighbours must think sometimes when they can see Linda going away with her fingers.
No, I have a question. I have a question about your projector. Mm. You watch it on your kitchen wall. I'm assuming because it's probably the biggest wall with the, you know, the best canvas for that.
Yeah.
Are you able to see that from like your living room couch, or do you have to sit in the kitchen to watch it?
Well, we've got our kitchen is a kind of a kitchen diner kind of. We've got a dining table and a sofa in there.
So oh,
it's
okay.
Quite a big room because we had it. This is fascinating for our listeners.
Share your decoration.
Hey, I wanted to know. It stands to reason someone else might.
Well, exactly. Yeah. Well, we did have a bathroom downstairs, and we had that knocked through and put upstairs. And so we had the whole back of the house is one big room.
Hmm. So interesting.
So yeah. So that's how it's
set up. I want to do that when I set up my my media room or whatever. Eventually, I'm going to try to get a projector like that.
It's really good, actually, and also you get a feel in some ways for films that you can imagine seeing them, what it would have been like to see them at the cinema, especially for the older films. Obviously, it kind of shows up any imperfections. So if you're watching something off YouTube, which is kind of not particularly good version, then it magnifies any kind of any problems. But that's good. The other film I did watch this week, which was in line with what we're going to be talking about, was Argento's Deep Red, the new Arrow release. I got the Blu-ray of that and watched that on the big screen. I watched the Italian international version, which is a lot longer. Which actually I kind of watched by mistake because I prefer the non international version. Because the
American cut, the 90-minute one.
I think there's two on there. There's,
yeah, there's one in between the two, I think, as well. Then is there?
Yeah, well, it's because the international one, I like it, but it's got loads of kind of comedy and stuff. Mm. It's not as tight. It's almost 2 hours long, which I think for a horror film or a thriller is too long. And I think it loses some of the momentum. So actually, I think it's kind of when they cut a lot of that stuff out. They probably did. It was probably for a good reason, really. Well, that may be maybe fighting talk.
Yes, I think it might be because I prefer the 2 hour cut.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay. I prefer the smaller version as well.
Okay, there you go. So two against one.
Shag off.
Oh, Eric.
Eric, go sit in the corner.
Yeah.
So obviously
nobody puts me in the corner.
We don't know what Nathan thought of the film. Those films, but he may regale us at some point later. So I kind of guess, is there anything else to talk about, or are we going to go straight on to the film, the main feature?
I guess we're going to Suspiria.
Okay, well, here is the...
I can't run from Suspiria. Can anyone else?
What?
Can anyone else?
What?
I think my...
from Suspiria. Are you able to? No?
Is that your joke of the week?
No, my joke of the week is hilarious. Wait till you hear it.
I think my entire thoughts on Suspiria is just going to be me humming the theme music.
Well, that's something to look forward to. So here is the international, or the American trailer for Suspiria.
Roses are red, violets are blue, but the iris is the flower that will mean the end. Suspiria. Suspiria. You can hide from Suspiria. Suspiria. But you cannot escape. The only thing more terrifying than the last 12 minutes of Suspiria are the first 92.
A young American dancer travels to Europe to join a famous ballet school. As she arrives, the camera turns to another young woman who appears to be fleeing from the school. She returns to her apartment where she is gruesomely murdered by a hideous creature. Meanwhile, the young American is trying to settle in at the school, but hears strange noises and is troubled by bizarre occurrences. She eventually discovers the school is merely a front for a much more sinister organisation. Suspiria is a film I probably first saw back in the mid to late 80s, and we discussed a number of films that kind of watched back, and my first impression wasn't particularly good as Suspiria. Again, I was a kind of immature sort of 16-year-old or whatever, and I didn't really get it. I thought it was a really bad film, and I remember me and my friend Steven sat there just laughing at it. Of course, I've done a complete 180.
Stephen Thrower?
No, it wasn't Stephen Thrower. But
what does Stephen think of it now?
I don't know. I haven't seen Stephen for 20 years.
No,
that's a sad story, isn't it?
It's very sad.
but I came to appreciate the film over the years, and now regard it as possibly my favourite film of all time. So it's kind of difficult, not difficult for me to talk about Suspiria. I can talk about Suspiria till the cows come home, but it's, it'll be interesting to see if there's any dissent amongst the ranks. I suspect there may be, but who knows? But yeah, I love everything about this film. I think I think it's Argento's best movie by a country mile. There was never anything like it before. And there's never really been anything like it since. It is a kind of a unique film, and it's such a shame to see Argento making churning out such rubbish now, when you can see what he was able to do back in 1976 when this was filmed. Everything about it, every shot is beautiful. I love the Euro dubbing over it.
I guess everybody's going to work. Sorry.
That's no worries. But I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts before we discuss it a little bit more. Should we cut to Nathan first?
Sure.
And it's going to be like one of those kind of transatlantic kind of things where you cut to someone. So Nathan in Atlanta, what are your thoughts?
Oh, hello, everybody. This is Nathan. Unfortunately, I couldn't make this episode. I was too busy hanging out with Elvira and the twins. But as far as Suspiria goes, I had to chime in because it's definitely in my top three Argento films of all time, along with Tenebrae and Opera, which Opera will always be my number one film of his. But I love Suspiria. I think it's very beautifully shot, just like any Argento movie, I should say. The opening two murders, actually, I thought they were very scary. When I first saw it, I was actually terrified. I was really young when I saw this for the first time. So the opening murders was extremely scary to me. And just like the wind, the skylight window breaking, shattering. I mean, it was just an amazing piece of film just watching that. I mean, it was kind of like being scared, but kind of in awe at the same time. So I'd never, kind of seen a movie that was as beautifully shot at that point in time, as I was still very young. I'm a big fan of it. I think the whole mystery behind it is very intriguing. The whole deal with Turn the Blue Iris, I always remember that. The whole room full of the razor barbed wire, that scene is unbelievably painful to watch. I mean, that poor girl, I can't imagine sitting there or laying there, I guess, tangled up in that razor barbed wire. It's just a great film, altogether. And, one of the actresses in it, and I feel terrible cause her name escapes me now, but, she was also in Dark Shadows, and I love that actress, and I'd never actually seen her in a movie, but when I saw this, I recognized her immediately as the, actress from Dark Shadows that I really liked that show when I was a kid. So it was kind of nice to see her in something else. The finale, again, I've always been a big fan of how a lot of Italian movies, like they're big finales. I mean, especially with Argento, I mean, think about like the finale for, you know, Tenebrae. I mean, it was just a crazy, wild finale. And like it, at the end of Suspiria, I mean, it gets really crazy. And I love that. So, you know, Suspiria gets, you know, two thumbs up from me. I love it. You know, I could rewatch it, you know, over and over again. And I can't say that about a lot of Italian films. I mean, I do like them, but I don't find them for the most part rewatchable, but this is definitely one that's highly rewatchable. So, I have to say, I would probably give it like a 9 out of 10, very good film. And that is my thoughts.
Sorry. Well, hopefully that was Nathan talking about the film. If for whatever reason all you hear is a record scratch, then something's gone horribly wrong. Mm. But it's beyond our control. But Eric, what are your thoughts on Suspiria?
Well, you were certainly expecting Descent, but you won't be getting any from me because I do love Suspiria. The only thing I would disagree with is I don't think it's Argento's best film, as we've discussed, I think, a few times. I still prefer Deep Red. Suspiria has one of the strongest opening 15 minutes of any horror film ever. And I think Argento has said that he wanted to start his film the way other horror films end, with kind of the sort of this blistering burst of action and violence and suspense and terror. And even the few shots at the start of the airport are, you know, are filled with this odd atmosphere. You have the weird colors scheme of Suspiria set out straight away in the airport, and you have the sound of the automatic doors, which is weird and menacing. And then, of course, she walks out into the rain as if she's just stepped out, you know, to catch the 84 bus to work in Dublin. You know, it's a sight I'm familiar with. So I wake up every day to my own Suspiria, really. The gore in the film is never terribly realistic. It has that color of melted red crayons, which is a quote attributed to Tom Savini about his work on Dawn of the Dead, and it's the same type of effect in Suspiria, which gives it, I suppose, another worldly quality that sort of adds to the atmosphere. The one scene that does make me wince, though, and it's realistic whilst being unrealistic at the same time, is the scene of the open wound with you can see the beating heart through the wound and it's being stabbed, and it's quite grim and gruesome. And it's probably that one shot that made it. It was never an official video, Nasty Justin, was it? But it was close to being one, I think.
I would have thought, yes. I think you're right. Yeah.
I do love the shot of Pat having her face. Is somebody falling over?
It was my cat, sorry.
All right. I was going to say, I love the shot of Pat with her face squished against the window, because you can have somebody's face squished against the window in the most serious movie, even like something like Schindler's List, but it'll only ever come off as being goofy looking. And if you just, like, somebody's face sort of squished in like that is just, it makes me laugh. I'm sorry, I'm just immature. I watch You've Been Framed, what can I say? Visually, as you were saying, the film's a work of art. Now, I saw it like you, Justin, back in the 80s on a pan and scan. Well, it probably wasn't even pan and scanned. It was just zoomed in VHS in the late 80s. And it didn't work for me because I wasn't getting the visual or audio treat that the film was meant to be. Because let's face it, script-wise, there's not a whole lot going on. And if you're watching sort of a pan and scan version, you're probably not going to be able to fully appreciate Suspiria. So it was only when I saw it in widescreen on DVD in the late 90s, maybe, that I fully began to appreciate Suspiria. Because up to then, I was thinking, God, this film is so overrated. I don't see what the fuss is all about. But, I mean, I do now. And I love Goblin's score for it. I think that is probably their finest. This is probably the finest music in an Argento movie. I'll agree with that. As much as I love Deep Red and the music in Tenebrae, I think this is my favourite, the one for Suspiria. And even when Joseph sings it so lovely with his voice of an angel, it makes it even more sublime. I haven't been moved by music so much since I heard Justin singing There's a Light That Never Goes Out at karaoke.
Which will never be played, just like the...
I can recreate Justin's thing if you want.
Do.
When can be recreating the Giggle Fest?
No, I don't have to recreate that.
That's true.
Shut it, you slags. Yeah, as you were saying, that nothing was ever made like this visually, certainly before or since. Although I think Inferno comes quite close, which was the direct follow-up to this film. I think it does manage to capture some of the look and feel of Suspiria without being as good a film as Suspiria. Yeah, there's the most weird and odd wallpaper, for starters, and just the architecture of the building is otherworldly. But as I said, what is probably lacking is in script, because things seem to happen at random, like maggots fall out of ceilings, bats attack Susie for no apparent reason, and the film just... The problem I have with the ending is I always found that Helena Marcus is killed quite easily. I don't understand why a flash of lightning makes her outline appear when she's supposed to be invisible, and it's all very surreal and odd. But because it succeeds in spite of its script, I would say. And Daria Nicolodi has always gone on about how, oh, I'm responsible for the script of Suspiria, it's all my idea, blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, that may be true, but it's nothing to boast about, because it's not a great script. It's all about the execution. And that's why I think a remake of Suspiria would really have to do something extra special to be successful, because that script is nothing to write home about. But as I said, it's brilliantly executed, and it would be one of my favourites as well. It wouldn't be my favourite film of all time. I doubt it would make my top 10 even, I'd say. But it would be pretty close. But I do love it, yeah. So big thumbs up. It's a really, really good movie, if a kind of plotless one. So.
Okay, well, thank you, Eric. Joseph, are you going to now hum the entire...
Yeah. Let's see.
There is a light.
There is a light, and it never goes out.
All right, darling.
Suspiria.
Say, Justin?
Apples and pears, where's your banana?
Yeah. Yeah, get up them apples and pears, you slag.
Right.
That's my Justin impression for today. Sorry, continue, Joseph.
Anyway, Suspiria. I do prefer Inferno. Inferno's my favorite Argento movie. And I agree with Eric that I think Suspiria has a really crummy script, if I'm honest. But that's really not the point. Other than that, you won't really get any dissent from me. I think this is a brilliant... I kind of liken it to a Salvador Dali painting come to life, or some kind of other kind of avant-garde kind of, you know, just strange colors and textures.
Jesus, Joseph, you're a genius. What didn't I think of that?
Just strange textures and colors just bleeding onto the screen. One thing I don't know why I've never really noticed this, but it's a very loud movie, and I don't mean loud like volume. I just think... there's always some kind of, you know, well, I guess I would say volume. There's always some kind of, you know, noise or something just blaring out of the speakers at all times. There's never really any, I guess you call them quieter moments. There may be like a couple, but they're just, you know, they're relatively small in comparison to the bombacity of just of everything else. I think the sound and, you know, sound people probably had a field day, you know, putting this together, just throwing all these, I think it was Justin said about the airport, you know, the doors opening and all this stuff and stuff scratching against walls and people, even people walking. It's just amplified. And I guess it kind of lends to the otherworldly feel of it. I think it's a visually beautiful film. I mean, the color scheme is just, you know, I don't really have much background on the film, to be honest. I wonder what the budget was, because I think Argento probably spent, you know, the bulk of it just making everything look so striking. And I think that's why, for me, Suspiria would be in my top, at least my top 20, because it's just so great to look at. And it's, it's wildly entertaining because of that. Like I said, I do agree with Eric. I think there's... you know, really no script to speak of. The story is just kind of, you know, minimal at best. But if you're in for a, you know, just to have your, have eye orgasms or something, this is the movie you want to watch, because as far as visuals go, I think this might be Argento at his, at his peak. He certainly throws his like little touches into every one of his movies, but I think he just kind of, you know, stepped on the gas here and just, you know, floored it. So yeah, no dissent from me, a thumbs way up. I would be interested to see this film done, maybe remade with a better script. I mean, I don't think it would ever live up to what Argento pulled off, you know, stylistically. But, you know, something like this with a, you know, a top-notch script would probably make for an even better film. But as it stands, you know, this is pretty perfect in my opinion. Yeah, maybe it doesn't even really need a script. Maybe it's just, you know, like watching a nightmare. You don't, you know, it's like piece by piece and they're all out of order. Maybe that's the way it's, you know, meant to be. So, yeah, thumbs up. Thumbs way up.
Cool. Okay. I mean, it's kind of almost like the script is kind of incidental, isn't it, to the movie?
Yeah, because I've never really fully understood what the purpose of having a coven, having a ballet school as the cover for a witch's coven is all about. What are they doing to the students? Why are they drugging Susie? I don't get it.
Yeah, I don't. I mean, whether or not they kind of need her as a kind of sacrifice, because they sort of take her. She's very insistent that she moves back into school. Isn't she for some reason? And they made out in the beginning that her aunt was a wealthy benefactor, so I kind of guessed maybe they're after money, but they're not. They don't really say. I mean, I wasn't aware that the script was by Darren Acoldi. I thought the story was a rich. Well, there's
story. I don't know who wrote the screenplay.
Yeah, because I mean I mean she said it was based on a story from her grandmother, didn't she? That teachers in a kind of a drama school or acting school who also practiced the black arts. Yeah. But then Argento then said it was all made up, that wasn't true. But obviously, they famously had a big falling out, didn't they? Well, they were married in real life, obviously. Well, I don't know if they still hate each other, but there was obviously a lot of animosity there.
Well, she doesn't hate him now. I think she probably should after what he made her do in Mother of Tears. So,
one thing you were saying, Justin, is how Argento basically opens the first 15 minutes of the film in this, you know, surreal nightmarish quality, and it's just all horror, you know, for those 15 minutes. So if you were a first-time viewer of this film, you'd maybe be worried that he kind of, you know, spent himself before the finale, but I appreciate that, you know, the finale is just as bombastic, you know, in the house when you basically figure out, you know, as best as you can, according to the script, what's going on. It's just as kind of nightmarish and just in your face as the first 15 minutes. So I think it kind of lends credence to that tagline. If the first 12 minutes or the first 12 minutes didn't scare you, the last 96 will, or something like that.
Yeah, it's kind of, I've always thought the very end, it was a little bit of an anticlimax, isn't it? I mean, it's a bit, the whole kind of school burning down and her just walking away.
Well, what I mean is, like, you know, leading up to that, it's pretty, you know, in your face. I would agree with you that it kind of just ends and it says, you have been watching Suspiria. But yeah, that's kind of...
That was always, I always found that a little bit kind of anticlimactic, considering what happened. I mean, it's a bit of a hoary old fallback, isn't it, of the place burning down. They, you know, it was kind of a standby in pretty much every Roger Corman, Edgar Allan Poe adaptation. That
and kind of makes you wonder if he just ran out of money or something.
Well, Hellraiser does the exact same thing. It's kind of has this big build up to a finale, and then it just, the finale is, oh, the house begins to crumble, and that's it.
Yeah, but having said that, I mean, it's you know, I think Argento's just being really, really playful, isn't he, in the film. He's kind of like, he's obviously got the money to make the film exactly how he wants to do it, and he's kind of experimenting, you know, which he does to a greater or lesser degree in Inferno, which is a much more kind of sober film, isn't it? I mean,
it's just as surreal, though, and it's got that fantastic, it hasn't got a violent opening, but it has that opening where the woman goes into the submerged basement, which is really weird.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's going to...
Speaking of the submerged basin, I guess they kind of play on that a little more in Inferno.
Yeah, I mean, Inferno's a beautiful film, and I think it's... but it's going to... I mean, by more sober, it's less playful, I kind of guess. It's more serious, isn't it?
Yeah, I think maybe I prefer Inferno because, you know, this is not a knock against Suspiria, but I think maybe Inferno had a better, you know, script.
Well, I don't know about that. I think I disagree with that.
I think
Inferno has even less of a script, I think, in my opinion.
But. I don't. I have to disagree with you there.
Oh, some dissent, finally. Yeah. Fine. Yeah.
Now, one thing, before you get into that, I would not consider this a slasher, would you guys?
No. I don't consider it a giallo really either, but I can kind of see there are two things.
That, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, there is a killer going around with a razor, and there is that old, particularly Argento in his giallo would have a character who has, who witnesses or hears something at the start of the film that they don't quite understand, and then it kind of makes sense towards the end. Like if you think of the missing painting in Deep Red and the...
It has those...
Who's murdering who in Bird with the Crystal Plumage, that type of thing. So
detective style, you know, piece it together things. So.
Yeah, but I've always viewed this as kind of a witchcraft movie rather than a slasher or a giallo.
I mean, I think we've had this discussion. I mean, it's something that kind of erupts amongst nerdy circles kind of periodically is whether or not Suspiria is a giallo. I mean, I've always been of the thought that it is giallo, albeit a supernatural one, because you have all these things. You have the killer, who you have the mystery, who is the killer. You have the amateur detective, Susie Kendall, throughout it. I mean, Argento...
Susie Banion, not Kendall.
I get my Susies mixed up. You also, he kind of abandons stuff, because you get the police at the beginning, don't you, after the first murder? But then they don't really put in an appearance.
But do they tell you who the murderer is? Is it different people? Is it just anyone who's at hand to dispatch people?
Well, it's kind of the killer at the beginning. When you see their hands, they're really hairy arms, aren't they? I kind of get the impression it's some kind of supernatural being that's been conjured up by the witches to do their bidding.
So, well, it's folklore. A lot of witches had hairy, hairy bodies and hairy arms. So, that's pretty much what I got out of it from. I mean, it's obviously not really spelled out for you in the phenomenal script, I'd say. But one thing, another thing I do appreciate about Suspiria is that, Argento and, especially a lot of these Italian directors, they kind of fall back into the detective plot. And I'm kind of glad for once that, that one's just kind of shoved by the wayside, because I find that the least entertaining thing in these films. So I was glad, this is more just, get into the meat of this, all these visuals instead of some, mustachioed detective trying to figure everything out.
Well, I think it's, because it was almost the detectives at the beginning. It's kind of the last kind of tenuous link to reality, isn't it? This kind of the mundane kind of... police procedural kind of sort of line, and it's after that. I mean, to be honest, right from the moment she, even before she walks out the doors at the airport, you've got that music, and that kind of voiceover, the kind of strange kind of like little sort of telling you Susie Banion, as if this was kind of telling a story, telling a fairy tale, which essentially is what it is. The other thing about it was I read that Argento wanted to have all the girls in the school to be about 10 or 11 years old. And so which he wasn't able to do. But if you can imagine the film made, if you actually had all the characters as being little girls in it and all this stuff still happening, it would have been very strange. But he filmed like the doorknobs and stuff like being higher, so made the women look smaller than they actually were, to give that kind of childlike thing. And all the language, the thing that Eric, about the all names that begin with S, and that whole kind of thing between Olga and Stefania Cassini's character, where they that's kind of the kind of language that little girls would use, isn't it?
It's a very this is slightly different, but it's a very sibilant movie, as I've been saying. It's like, Jesus, Susie, you're a genius. there's a lot of emphasis on S's for something, and people have weird... I suppose Italian films always have that kind of weird soundtrack to them because they're all post-dubbed afterwards. But this one in particular, because I think people are trying to affect German accents, it seems again, I suppose it makes it otherworldly. So
I mean,
it's playing in the background here. Sorry, this is just a complete tangent. Udo Kier looks quite like... what's his name from Friday the 13th Part 2, who I interviewed?
Russell Todd.
Russell Todd, yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
And in this, he looks like Russell Todd. Well. There we go. That's the end of the
attack. The one thing about Suspiria that kind of makes me chuckle is the opening narration. Every time I hear it, I keep thinking of A Night to Dismember. Susie went berserk. I was like, oh, no.
Nobody wants to be thinking of it. Well, I don't know. It's quite nice to think about A Night to Dismember.
Yeah.
I actually, I've doing some training on video camera work and work during the week, and somebody asked me I'll be the new Steven Spielberg or something. I said, no, I'll probably be the new Doris Wishman. And of course, nobody got the joke.
Yeah. We're just going to film people's feet.
Yeah.
Wait a minute, Eric.
I'm going to film lots of footage and then lose three quarters of it and then sort of make a film out of the final remaining quarter.
You're saying no one at your job laughs at your jokes either?
No, everyone hates me.
Oh. Anyway, moving on.
Well, did you know there's a famous deleted scene in the film. You know the scene where Stefania Cassini falls into the room of razor wire? Mm. In the original script, and they actually filmed this, that was a room full of Justin's underpants. But the distributor said, no, that's too horrific. So you need to change that because there's no way we could release something with that horror in it. So they changed it to a room full of wire.
I hope for your sake, Eric, your joke of the week's better than that.
I like the... I know you spoke of this earlier, but I love the structures in this film. And they, the walls, how they just kind of, they're almost like 3D in ways. And the way doors are placed and the way windows are placed, it just kind of reminded me of some kind of like M.C. Escher painting or something. It's just someone going up stairs that lead to stairs going down or something like that. It's just, I just love those visuals. They're just so
that wind, arresting. It looks like a window going up the stairs and it's at a slant. Is it a window or is it meant to be a painting?
I think it was a window. That's why I said it reminds me of like Escher or something. Just like it leads to something that shouldn't be there, and I think it's just very kind of visually arresting.
Mm. Well, the film, the school is sort of like a TARDIS. It sort of has it doesn't obey the laws of physics on the inside because it seems, as you said, it seems to have endless corridors and doors going up and down, and it's like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory.
That I love the moment where her name escapes me, but the girl falls through the window, and the way she just slides into the noose and hangs her, just the way that's shot. Absolutely. It's just Argento at the top of his game.
Absolutely. Well, it's just it's just so playful, isn't it? He's kind of obviously having a whale of a time doing it. And we were talking about the language and the way they're speaking, because apparently, from what I read, just going to a little bit of background just briefly, was that the cast were made up of English, Italian, and German speakers, and they were all speaking their own language, and then it was post-dubbed. So even they could be having conversations with each other, like Susie Bannion would be sort of speaking to, say, the Leda Valley's character, but Leda Valley would be talking back into her in Italian, and she'd be speaking in English.
I noticed a couple of the actors and actresses, obviously some of them were just so obviously ADR, but there's a couple of them. I think what's her name? The older woman she speaks to at the station, maybe a train. I can't remember if it's a train station or what, but or the airport or something. She looked like she was actually, speaking like, I guess phonetic English. It didn't really look dubbed, but then you'd see someone else's mouth and you can obviously tell. It's just kind of all over the place, kind of like the movie, sort of.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of I found it funny that Joan Bennett got nominated or won Best Supporting Actress at some film festival in 1978.
Yes.
Because I thought unless her dubbing was quite bad, but she looks quite, it's not quite.
Damn, settle down.
Joseph's pussy is going berserk.
Psycho.
It's not as bad as the mother in Nightmare on Elm Street, but it's
no, well, nothing is.
Nathan's gonna be upset when he hears that.
Yeah. But he thinks she's brilliant in it. Yeah. I still can't. That still astonishes me. That fact.
Hey man, I can't believe you guys are making fun of her. That's my Nathan impression.
Uncanny.
Yes. Yeah.
But Ronnie Blakely, I mean, she won, we talked about it, didn't we? She won Best Actress for another film. So I think sometimes even good actors and actresses kind of can give performances.
Yeah, just like Mark Wahlberg, cue Joseph.
What? No. Planning to murder me in my sleep. Yeah. Sorry.
You know, I love Joan Bennett, when she does that, she raises her eyebrow, doesn't she, when Jessica sort of says that she saw you know, near the beginning when she kind of she's talking to the police, and then she pipes up, Jessica Harper pipes up, and Joan Bennett kind of raises her eyebrow and gives her like a sort of like a real resting bitch face.
Mm. One thing. Go ahead, Eric. Sorry.
I was just going to say, I until I was doing some research, background research into the film this week, I didn't realize who Joan Bennett was, that she was such a big deal in the 40s and 50s. So I just thought it was another actress for hire that Argento found in Rome or something.
One thing I was going to ask you guys, did either of you see the concluding chapter of the Three Mothers trilogy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Mother of Tears. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, Suspiria and Inferno were better, but I actually kind of enjoyed it a little bit. What about you guys?
It's trashy enough to be enjoyable, but as a companion piece to Inferno and Suspiria, it's really rather sad.
Again, just emptying the
background stuff, but he had 4 months to shoot Suspiria, probably the same for Inferno, and it looks like he had 4 days to do Mother of Tears. It looks incredibly cheap and doesn't... It doesn't have the stylized lighting or anything to tie it to the other two, or
yeah, it's kind of like what I was thinking. It's like when I watched it, I was like, okay, this is Argento. He's I can tell he's trying to, you know, recapture some of that magic, but it didn't really work as much. But I guess it could have been worse, maybe.
And also, the mother of sighs, is it in Suspiria, is sort of this old evil witch. The mother of what's the mother of darkness, is it in Inferno, who's sort of a middle-aged woman. And then you get to Mother of Tears, and it's this topless bimbo with no acting talent is the Mother of Tears.
The Mother of Tits.
Yeah. Mother of Tits, indeed. And this is kind of a spoiler alert, but... okay, spoiler alert for Mother of Tears, if you don't want to know what happens at the end, but it involves burning a blouse, and that's how you kill the evil, by burning her blouse.
It's I think maybe it's... Suspiria and Inferno were, I guess, relatively filmed, you know, within close proximity of one another. And then all this time passed and you had people just basically saying, oh, yeah, he's spending all this time to just build it up and he's going to knock it out of the park. So it was kind of a letdown that it just could not live up to that.
Is the reason that the last 20 years he hasn't produced something terribly brilliant, is that due to budgets or has he just lost his mojo completely?
I don't know. I mean... I still see those flashes, like that one film we covered, Sleepless.
Yeah, that was Sleepless.
I quite like that one, and it's more recent, so I think he still has it, but it just seems to me maybe he's not given the resources he was in the 70s and the early 80s. So, you know, who knows?
I think part of the problem with the Mother of Tears is the cheapness, because it's supposed to be this apocalyptic vision of Rome with everyone, you know, it's kind of
The apocalypse apparently is a couple of goth girls at an airport pushing people out of the way.
Yes. Exactly. So so I think he's limited to that. But having said that, it's kind of Argento's probably his own worst enemy, really, isn't he? Because he kind of obviously when he was making these films, they were making a lot of money because Suspiria was actually a big deal, made a lot of money. And so he was given money. But as soon as his film started possibly to underperform, in Italy and abroad, the budgets shrank. And it's kind of in line with the rest of the Italian film industry, I kind of guess. Because to be honest, I mean, he's the only one who's still making films, isn't he? Obviously, a lot of the other, his contemporaries like Lucio Fulci and people like that are dead. But people like Sergio Martino and, other directors are still around. But they're all working in television now, aren't they?
I guess one thing you could say, in Argento's favor is that, you know, once you reach, you know, a high as Suspiria or Inferno, I guess there's really nowhere else to go but, you know, down. Not to throw in an innuendo there, but I mean, you make these two movies that are just phenomenal. I mean, it's really kind of hard to top those. So, you know, I guess you should be expected not to be as, you know, impressed.
I mean, what's he doing now? Isn't he doing some film with Iggy Pop?
Oh, I don't know about that.
Oh, The Humanity.
Hey, I like Iggy Pop.
Yeah, I know, but it's a recipe for disaster, I think.
You never know, I guess.
I'm just going to have a look on IMDb to see what...
Has Iggy Pop done any acting before?
He's been in a few things. I couldn't tell you anything off the top of my head, but... I wouldn't call him a brilliant actor or anything, but, you know, he carries himself fairly well.
I don't think you need to be a brilliant actor to be in an Argento movie anymore.
No.
My goodness. Do you know what? Well, I've just looked on IMDb, which obviously isn't always the most reliable thing. But he was crowdfunding to make Sandman or something with Iggy Pop. But on IMDb, he's up his next feature. Well, it was in 2015. It said was upcoming projects, which it says he made Macbeth.
Argento?
Well,
was it like a telenovela or something? I don't know. I didn't hear about that either.
No.
Yeah, well, I can outdo you on that one. Iggy Pop's latest project, which has just been completed, was as a role of nurse in Sharktopus versus Whalewolf.
Yeah, because when I want to go get bandaged up, I think of Iggy Pop to suture my wounds. Yeah.
No, but it's upcoming project. It's The Sandman. With Dario Argento, based on the novel. So it's based on some novel. I'm not sure what it's about. It says it's, let me have a look. It sounds like it could be a return to the giallo. So the Sandman tells the story of Nathan,
yes,
a young student in the city who struggles to forget his childhood trauma at the hands of the serial killer dubbed the Sandman. So we'll see what happens. But it's funny, I hadn't heard about Argento's Macbeth. But there's reviews of it on IMDb, so presumably it's a real thing.
I hope it's better than his Phantom of the Opera or Il Fantasma dell'Opera, which was
Julian Sands. Yeah,
yeah, which was kind of terrible, if you ask me. But that's just my opinion.
Well, what it says, this isn't a film in the proper sense, nor is it a production of Shakespeare's play. Rather, it's a filmed performance of the opera by Giuseppe Verdi, as directed on stage by Argento.
Oh, I'd heard he'd done that. I didn't know they'd filmed it though. So,
So
interesting.
Interesting. So, well, that could be something to look at. Do we want to talk a little bit about background?
Sure.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Eric, do you want to, or Joseph? Okay. What about you?
Have
you
got? I wasn't able to put any together this week because I've been kind of busy. So I'll let you guys go.
Okay, Eric.
Okay, well, this was shot in Munich and West Bavaria in Germany and also in Rome for 16 weeks, starting on July the 26th, 1976. As you said originally, Argento wanted younger actresses to play the students, but the producers put the kibosh on that. What else do I have here? Yeah, the title and the general concept of The Three Mothers came from a book called Suspiria de Profundis, or Sighs from the Deep, by 19th century author Thomas de Quincey. I'm sure, Justin, you've read all its works, seeing as you're the highbrow one of the podcast.
Oh, yes. Yes, of course. Yeah, I've got one next to my bedside table at the moment. Yeah.
Okay, well, there's a section in the Suspiria de Profundis called Lavanna and Our Ladies of Sorrow. Apparently, Lavanna was the ancient Roman goddess of childbirth, and De Quincey imagines three companions for her, who are the Mother of Tears, Mother of Sighs, and Mother of Darkness. And sort of that's where he ran with the concept from. Apparently, according to Jessica Harper in the book Spaghetti Nightmares, was that where I read it? The woman playing Helena Marcos isn't credited, but apparently she was a 90-year-old ex-prostitute that Dario Argento found in Rome. So he obviously got her on the cheap, I'd say. Originally, the film was to have starred Daria Nicolodi as Susie Bannion. She also had written the screenplay with Dario Argento. It was... Daria had come up with the title Suspiria, taken because she was reading that book I just mentioned at the time. And she sort of came up with the idea because her grandmother had told her stories of an old school she attended or knew about that taught dance, but also taught the black arts. I think you mentioned that already, Justin. However, the distributors wanted an American name in the lead role to make it more marketable, so they chose Jessica Harper. And Dario Argento then offered the role of Sarah to Daria, but she said, no thanks, I'm insulted that you're offering me the secondary role. So she stormed off. In the end, I think for publicity, they made up a story that Daria Nicolodi had injured herself practicing her dancing for the role, and that's why she wasn't in the film in the end. Although she can be glimpsed in the film at the start, she's walking through the airport to the left of Jessica Harper, and then apparently her voice is used for Helena Marcos. It's her doing the gravelly voice, which actually her voice and also the undead Sarah come back to life reminded me a bit of Evil Dead. I don't know if anyone picked up on that. I'm wondering if that was an inspiration for the ghouls of the Evil Dead. No, okay.
I think it's a valid comparison. Mm. Yeah.
Joan Bennett, as I said, I wasn't really aware of who Joan Bennett was until this week. She played Madame Blanc in the film, and she had a very successful Hollywood career that started way back in 1916 when she was 6 years old. She had been married to Fritz Lang, who had been a hero of Dario Argento's. I think she was widowed at this stage by the time they were filming Suspiria. But in terms of horror, she's probably most famous for being in the TV series Dark Shadows. And as for the remake, where in September 2015, which is about 6 months ago now, Luca Guadagnino, I don't know who he is, he was going to direct a remake. He announced he's going to direct a remake with the intention of using the cast of his film A Bigger Splash, which I haven't seen. But this cast includes the likes of Tilda Swinton, Ralph Fiennes and Dakota Johnson. So that's planned for a 2016 shoot, and a 2016 is this year, actually. So it's going to film apparently in August of this year and be released next year. It'll be interesting to see any remake of Suspiria, but one with Tilda Swinton, I never imagined that would be the case. I always thought it would be a sort of teenagers from, you know, the latest hot teenagers from television would be starring in it, and it would be 80 minutes long and would be really tedious and horrible and loud and annoying. But I don't know if that's reason to be hopeful that it might be decent. Tilda Swinton in Suspiria?
Yeah, no, I think it'd be quite interesting. Well, it could be quite interesting because I read that it's going to be set in Berlin, isn't it? 1977. Yes, yeah. So it's actually going to be set at the same time the original, Suspiria was filmed. So yeah, that could be interesting. But there was also I'd read that thing where it said that this one would focus on the concept of motherhood. Rather, so I'm not quite sure how that would fit into thing. Although having what you said about the inspiration about the so it could be. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see.
They could end up overthinking it, though, and making... Because, as I said, I suppose one of the joys of Suspiria is that the plot is so threadbare and the execution is so brilliant. So I don't know if they need to be going to any great lengths to overcomplicate the plot.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's kind of like Suspiria is kind of... It's about the sound and the fury and the colour and everything, isn't it? It's not the story itself about, you know, is pretty run-of-the-mill, isn't it? It was not remade, but it was kind of similar films like Satan, School for Girls and things like that. You know, those kind of TV movies where you have a girls' school and bad things are happening, that this kind of thing. And they're great. They're very enjoyable, but it's fairly run of the mill, isn't it? This idea of a witches in a girls' school. And so it's not really a story that makes Suspiria. So it's, you know, if someone just makes a faithful remake but in script only, then it remains to be seen, doesn't it?
One thing I did have about background, I actually forgot about, but I just remembered. I'm sure both of you maybe have heard of the London, England group Miranda Sex Garden.
Yes, I've got one of their albums, actually.
Yeah,
I have none of their albums.
Goth rock, kind of dream pop. They were basically just kind of, you know, around from 90 to 2000. A couple of their albums were, you know, based around, you know, horror films. Like their last one was Carnival of Souls, but their 1993 album was titled Suspiria. And it was I guess their music, they kind of do that kind of avant-garde kind of all over the place, you know, stuff. So I guess that's, I'm not sure about it, but I think it is a dedication to the movie Suspiria.
Almost definitely. Yes, I'd think so.
But yeah, there you go. That's my background for the week.
Well, thank you very much.
My final bit of background is, and this is research that I've done in my head rather than in practice, but in the film, when people walk on maggots, they make a crunchy sound like they're walking on Rice Krispies. But maggots are kind of slimy in that, so I imagine they'd make a squelchy sound.
Yes. Okay. Well, that's interesting. Okay. Well, thank you, Eric, for that insightful tidbit. Mm-hmm. But... you've covered a lot of what I was going to mention, which is fine. The thing I was going to mention was that when the film was released, it was released to American screens. And in fact, the original American release, which we don't really see anymore, is had the that kind of pulsating brain kind of Suspiria logo in it. You see in the American trailer. So the American cut of the movie would have had that. The film...
Oh, I love that. Because I'd say I love that trailer, the one that you played earlier, with the pulsating brain-like letters.
Yeah, well, it's kind of, so it was, I've never seen, because always, you always get the credits that you get, you know, we now see the ones that they've been used since kind of the Anchor Bay and everything sort of from the early 2000s right now up until now. And I think, is it Synapse or somebody's working on the definitive Blu-ray release, isn't it?
I know, because the sort of the fanboys out there are not happy with any of the releases. I mean, I'm satisfied enough.
Mm.
I don't, well, cause maybe because I don't know really any better or what I'm supposed to expect. But
well, to be honest, I watched my Anchor Bay release on DVD. I haven't got it on Blu-ray only because I'm waiting for like the definitive version to come out.
Yeah, because that's the one I was viewing as well. It doesn't really have any extras. It comes with a bonus disc of Dario Argento's World of Horror, but it has no extras specific to Suspiria apart from the trailers.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that will be good when that comes out. But when the film was originally released, it was also put out famously on a double bill with Umberto Lenzi's Eyeball.
What an evening that would have been.
No, absolutely. But it was released, it was on double bills around 1979. But the films are kind of chalk and cheese, really, aren't they? I mean, they're both prime slices of Italian genre madness, but for kind of different reasons. Although Janet Maslin in the New York Times basically said that that she viewed Suspiria as a comedy and not really a horror movie, which is kind of interesting.
That's like what you and your friend Steve did.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, that's true. Because I found her review of it from, I don't know when it was, but when the film came out, and she closed it by saying Suspiria is really quite funny during those isolated interludes when nobody is bleeding. All the stuff we talked about. I mean, she says Mr. Argento's methods make potentially stomach-turning material more interesting than it ought to be. Shooting on bold, very fake-looking sets, he uses bright primary colours and stark lines to create a campy, surreal atmosphere, and his distorted camera angles and crazy lighting turn out to be much more memorable than the carnage. So it's kind of interesting. I think at the time, Argento's always been seen as a major director outside of Italy, in Britain, and especially in France. I think that he was famously kind of lauded in France. The film was put out. I mean, the trailer, if you've not seen the trailer, look at it on YouTube. But it's quite cheesy, isn't it? I mean, it starts off with a woman brushing her hair, and it turns round and she's got a skull face. But the film was put out, I believe it was put out by 20th Century Fox, but under a subsidiary, because they were kind of they didn't want to be associated with a kind of an exploitation film, as they were kind of termed back then. The film got released as it was such a big no that's right it was such a big hit in Japan that Deep Red was released to Japan as Suspiria 2, even though it came out beforehand.
And it has nothing to do with Suspiria.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, so, just wondering if there's anything else. I didn't find... I mean, I will look through... that's right. Well, actually, 20th Century Fox, they opened it in 700 theatres and put $2 million behind the advertising budget for the film. So they obviously had major confidence in it being a moneymaker, because Argento's films had been big hits at the American box office before, especially The Bird with a Crystal Plumage was a relatively big hit for him. And I think that's why, partly not so much because the films are big hits in Italy, which they were, but when they made lots of money abroad, then people in Italy would sit up and take notice. And that's why obviously his budgets possibly got bigger. And he was I could remember saying when I about 15 years ago, and I worked briefly with an Italian woman, and I just said, "Oh, I love Italian horror movies." And she said, "Oh, who do you talk about?" I said about Dario Argento, and she knew who Dario Argento was, but she didn't know anyone else. She didn't know Mario Bava or anyone like that. So in places like Italy, Argento is kind of the byword really for the horror movie. But it'd be nice to get one more decent film out of him before he pops his clogs.
How morbid.
Yeah, I mean, the way everyone's dropping like flies this year. I know. Watcher, careful.
Indeed, yes. Okay, I mean, I'm trying to think. I can't think of anything else.
Did you Did you know the budget on this film? I couldn't find it.
No, neither could I. No. But I imagine it was decent enough if he was filming for 4 months.
Yeah.
No, I couldn't find a budget for it. So, but yeah, it must have been a decent budget. And also, I think again with filming in having a kind of that kind of cast. I mean, he did that in other films, didn't he? Because I think Argento also, although he's very playful with what he's doing, he had you know, an eye on the commercial nature of the film. So, like many of his films, they featured an international cast. With an eye on it playing in English language territories, like especially America. I mean, it's curious actually. I mean, we've talked a bit about Inferno, I mean, that was probably Argento's most experimental film, wasn't it? And I love Inferno. I think it's an amazing movie as well. But it's a completely different shade, isn't it? If that's the right way of putting it. I mean, you know, it's Suspiria is all about the blood red, isn't it? They kind of pop.
Yeah, it's like
blood.
He has a color palette for every movie he does. Mm. Like this one's red, you know. Tenebrae's white, I'd say.
And Mother of Tears is very, very gray, if you ask me.
Yes.
Kind of attribute Inferno to like a deep blue or something.
It's
maybe.
Like a blue,
or green.
That's what I say. It's got a coldness to it.
Yeah.
To it, isn't it? It's kind of.
And it's got the world's worst death makeup special effect at the end, where the woman turns into the skeleton.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Yeah, that's bursts through the mirror.
I quite like that. It's quite.
Yeah, well, no, I do like it, but.
Yeah. I love that scene, actually.
Yeah. But it is very much a new corner news agent Halloween mask that the person's wearing.
Okay, well, is that Suspiria? We've got what we do have is some feedback from the Facebook boards.
Oh boy, and we have a lot of it.
Do you want to do a little bit of that, Joseph?
Yeah, a couple of these I'm going to kind of trim down because they're like dissertations. But to start, we have Mikey Faulkner. He says, "How can anyone hate this charming tale of a heroic dog that attacks an evil child? Suspiria is probably my second favorite horror movie of all time, much like Justin. Behind the original Halloween, much like Justin. It's just pretty much perfect on all levels. There's the obvious beauty of the cinematography, the amazing score, and other attributes that will obviously be covered on this show by you guys and my fellow listeners, but let us consider the hidden campy delights of Suspiria. She has a few matrons under her skirt after all. Sneaky Romanian kitchen staff. Evil wallpaper. The fact that everyone gives Susie a look that reads, stupid bitch, throughout the movie. A hulking lesbian brutalizing a blind man. Sexually ambiguous Miguel Bose. Daniel could have twisted my blue iris any day. Know what I'm saying, ladies? Wink, wink, and more. All in all, Suspiria has something for everyone. That's Mikey Faulkner.
Well, thank you, Mikey.
Mervyn Stevenson says, looks like I'm going against the trend here, but Suspiria just didn't hold my attention. It is a visually stunning movie with a dark fairy tale feel all the way through and with a creepy and jarring soundtrack, which I heard Simonetti play after a live performance along with a showing of Dawn of the Dead. Each murder was set up well with plenty of suspense, but getting trapped in a giant broken slinky did make me smile. I enjoyed the visuals, but not the story. I do prefer Deep Red, Tenebrae, and Bird with a Crystal Plumage. That's Mervyn Stevenson.
Okay, thank you, Mervyn.
Let's see. Bob Hartshorn says, Suspiria's plot may be thin and low on originality coherence, but who cares when your eyes and ears are getting massaged by such an ultra-stylish mix of jaw-dropping art direction, eye-popping camera work, super scary sound design, and Goblin's unforgettable music score. Add in lovely Jessica Harper and those brilliantly choreographed set pieces and what's not to like. For my money, Suspiria is the Blade Runner of Italian horror films and completely deserving of its muscular reputation. I'll rate it 11 out of 10. P.S. Will you be covering opera anytime soon? And that was from Bob Hartshorn, and I think opera may eventually happen.
It will. I think it's on the listener picks list, isn't it?
I believe it is, actually. I had to double check, but it may be.
No, yeah, well, that would be good. I'd like to do opera at some point.
I hope it's better than your There'll Be There's Light That Never Goes Out.
It's fantastic.
Go on, sing us an aria there, Justin.
I need to warm up my vocal cords.
He's going to have a drink to get his His pipes all cleaned out.
Did you know? Did you know that the I don't know if it's true, but they used to say opera singers used to suck people off before a big thing, because apparently it was the best thing for sort of lubricating the vocal cords.
Man, I should probably go to the opera more.
Well, yeah. I was reading Grace Jones's autobiography because I got it for Christmas, and she apparently went on stage. She was on stage with Pavarotti at one stage, and beforehand, her boyfriend at the time gave her cunnilingus because it helped exercise her vocal cords when she was screaming. Yeah, so there you go.
Blimey! See, it's all the things you've sort of find out and learn on the History yeah. Continues.
And then, yeah. And then after the show is finished, I'm going seagulling.
Oh, Eric, bringing the tone down.
Well, I like bird watching.
Well, fair enough. So, sorry, Joseph, carry on.
Let's see. Steve Symington always says...
He's a genius!
I've always loved Suspiria. I finally got to see it at an art house theater a few months ago. And love seeing all the color and hearing the soundtrack from a large sound system. My favorite Argento film.
Excellent. Thank you, Steve.
Andrew Burrell? Sorry, I'm not very good at these weird names.
Joseph.
Sorry. It's the one I didn't quite get, in quotation marks, upon the first viewing, but over time I have grown to love it. A hauntingly beautiful film that is one of a kind. A creepy, bloody fairy tale of sorts, Andrew.
Thank you, Andrew.
Let's see. Brad Yasuda writes, and I'm sorry, Brad, I'm really going to have to trim this down. Visiting the Argento well again. Good. This one, though, has to be a listener pick. Not a slasher, but still worth talking about. We've heard that Eric and Justin didn't like it when they first viewed it back in the distant past. Cute dinosaurs roaring. When I first saw it in the late 80s, like them, I had seen it on an edited VHS. When I finally picked up the Anchor Bay 3-disc DVD, I knew that I had something good on my hands. It was not the first Argento movie I'd seen. This was preceded by the cut releases of Phenomena and Creepers in brackets, and Tenebrae, Unsane in brackets. But at the time, it made me want to collect the man's work. With this one, we run the gauntlet of horror tropes, the haunted house, which is the Academy, the best friend who has to die, Sarah, the evil stepmother, Miss Tanner, metaphorically, the creepy child, Albert, the poisoning, the crazy harbinger, Daniel, and the old psychiatrist as metaphors, the old whore as the head witch, the creepy butler, and finally the brilliant death at the start of the film. Keep up the good work, gentlemen. Remember, as Udo Kier's Dubber said, bad luck isn't brought by broken mirrors, but by broken minds.
Thank you, Brad.
Let's see. Kara West Spry says, I love this movie. Last year, I was able to see Goblin perform the entire soundtrack live along with the film. I love Argento's use of color and music. I always felt that it should be viewed as a nightmare rather than a plot-driven film. And yeah, I would agree with that. Thank you, Kara.
Thank you, Kara.
Mike Alishan, who picked this film, says, Suspiria is my favorite film of all time. You can pause the movie wherever you like, and the image will be so stunning and beautiful that you can take it and frame it in an art gallery. Argento and Goblin are untouchable in this film. To say they're both in top form would be an understatement. This grand, colorful, brutally shocking Snow White of a fairy tale will always hold top spot in my art. I eagerly await for it to be covered, gents. Until then, I bid you all adieu.
Well, thank you for choosing it.
Yes, thank you. Mark Harrison says, or Harrison, it's another one of those names. This one's even got one of those schwa over the E. I'm sorry. Anyway, Suspiria is far too dated. I'm sure with its historical context, the film is great. But had it been released now, it would not be as well received. I showed the film to my family a few years ago. No word was spoken during the film. Once the film ended, my sister mentioned on how weird the film was. My parents nodded their heads, and no word was ever spoken about the subject ever again. Okay. Thanks, Mark. Miles Hamer says, a film that I can objectively see is crafted wonderfully, yet somehow manages to elude my admiration and affection. Love the score, mind, obviously. That's Miles Hamer.
Well, thank you, Miles. It's always good to have a differing opinion, isn't it?
Let's see. Tom Virtuoso says, and I may have to cut this one down for time constraints. I remember seeing Suspiria for the first time in high school in the 90s when my parents forgot they gave me access to rated R/NC-17 movies at the local video factory. And every week in the summer, I spent lawn mowing money trying to watch as many horror rentals as possible. Luckily, the store carried the uncut letterbox version, which was uncanny since we usually got edited Italian horror, i.e. Creepers, Grim Reapers, City of the Walking Dead, Make Them Die Slowly. I wasn't a fan of the trademark dubbing at the time, but the visuals were like nothing I had ever seen before, and the three scenes of violence were fairly shocking. Suspiria may not be every horror fan's cup of tea or red wine, but it's totally worth it for the entertainment value of overanalyzing the cast. That's from Tom Virtuoso.
Thank you, Tom.
I do want to apologize for cutting some of these down, but some of these would take forever to read, and we're on limited time, so I'll just move on to Ara Alishan. I'd venture to guess that this was one of my brother's listener picks, and it was, as it's probably his favorite movie of all time. I'd love to find something negative to post here just to mess with the guy, but I can't do it. Suspiria is a damn near perfect film. This is Dario Argento at his finest, and while I may personally prefer some of his other films, I can't argue with anyone who ranks this on the top of their list.
Well, thank you, Ara.
Justin Kosh Cook. I always pronounce his name wrong, and he always corrects me, but there you go. Oh, how this movie inspires me. One of the most visually arresting films of all time. A prime example of how to make a horror film in color. Add in the Goblin score, and you don't have a mere movie anymore. You have an experience. I even have a Suspiria tattoo, which I got when I was 17. And he posted a picture of that. So if you want to see that, just go to our Facebook page.
Ooh, what was that?
Hello.
Rumbly tummy.
Who was that?
Sorry, that was my stomach.
Oh.
I'm hungry. See, Simon Wright says, superlative timing, gents, as it boy. Okay, Simon Wright is just glad we picked this, okay? And I'm sorry. He says, as it was released on this day back in 1977, I'm planning on rewatching this tonight. As with many people, this was my gateway Italian horror film and sparked an obsession with that country's genre cinema that continues to this day. I'll simply end by saying it's one of the high watermarks of not only the slasher but horror in general, and will always be one of my absolute favorite films, period. That's from Simon Wright.
Oh, thank you, Simon.
Again, I'm sorry I had to cut yours down, Simon, but we are time. So, Soren Feltfoss Thompson says, Justin, you need to have your mouth washed out with soap for saying that Vertigo is dull. Just for that, I'm going to... What was that?
It is dull. It's... Yeah. But anyway,
he says, just for that, I'm going to say that Suspiria sucks and I hate it, even though it's not true. It's great and I love it.
Well, that's good. Yes. So, sorry, my controversial Hitchcock comment, but
yeah.
Not the first controversial cock comment you've made.
Pardon?
I don't know.
Okay, carry on.
Our honey-voiced friend Kieran Edwards says, when I first saw this film decades ago and they said that the murdered ballerina was Pat Hingle, I thought, wow, I didn't know he was that good of an actor. That's from Kieran Edwards. Scott Pliskin says, always loved that a ballet school had a barbed wire room. That's what I'm thinking. And it's true that people with names that start with S are snakes.
It is.
Yeah.
Susie. And her banshees.
Eric.
Susie and the banshees are so sad.
See, I didn't even go there, did I? I'm just about saying that.
No, you implied it at the start.
He's bullying you, Justin.
I know.
I'm bullying him back for the bullying he gave me earlier.
Yeah, but who wouldn't? Who wouldn't pay to see that scene recreated with Susie and Toya? With Susie killing Toya. Wouldn't that be marvelous?
No, it wouldn't. You're really mean, and that's quite morbid, and you could be arrested for comments like that.
I wonder how many razors Toya goes through shaving her arms.
Stop it.
Sorry, guys. Kevin Moore says, I freaking love this movie because even the opening scene of a woman exiting an airport becomes the most terrifying thing you've ever seen.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. Yeah, yeah. I would agree with that.
Thank you.
And some guy whose name I'm not even going to begin to try to pronounce. I'll just say his name is TG. Suspiria is perfect. That's all he said.
Okay. Well, thank you, TG.
Jesse Gandy says in capital letters with a lot of exclamation points, which?
Which?
And finally, Joseph Person. Joseph with an F and not a PH, so we're not, you know, likened. Says, worthless bag of garbage.
Oh. Well, okay. Controversial.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm. That is our listener feedback portion for Suspiria. Thank you for writing in.
Thank you for writing in indeed. And what I'll do is I'll play the how to get in touch with the show. We have got a little bit of feedback, but this is how to get in touch with us.
Be sure to search for and like us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at THC_podcast. Our voicemail is 858-233-9281. And you can email us directly at the.hysteria.continues@gmail.com.
Okay, so that's how to get in touch with us.
Boy, I never use Twitter. Our Twitter feed looks terrible, I'm sure.
Oh, Joseph. I hardly use Twitter anymore, to be honest. But we have a little bit of feedback. Eric, have you got anything?
No, I thought you had one.
I do have one. So Shall I read that? This is from Michael Tomlinson from London. And he says, an episode late, but a big happy anniversary to this great show. I realise you've done so many now, but I probably speak for so many in saying that we really do thank you for your stamina and effort in delivering the show for so long. I love you all, apart from Eric. Oh, no, sorry.
No, he didn't say that.
He didn't say that. No, sorry. Hugely appreciated, and I do sincerely hope you take these thank yous from us listeners as truly heartfelt, because these episodes are fantastically entertaining. Oh, thank you. That's very sweet. Anyway, I wondered if you had any ideas as to why there was such a pattern back in the 70s and 80s of multiple titles being used for films, which I don't think happens now. By that, do you think he means like the reissues of...
probably, yeah.
Cause they, yeah, it's my understanding. Yeah,
they
could
get away with it then.
Yeah, my understanding is they basically... I could be wrong, but I think they're just trying to sell that to as many markets as possible and just using different titles, maybe.
Mm. I think you're probably right. And also, I don't know, but I kind of guess there's probably like a tax thing there as well, wasn't there, that they could sort of kind of hide the profits if they released it under different titles. I don't know, but certainly it was, I think, what you said last time, wasn't it, Joseph, that there was it was their way of basically, you know, tricking people into seeing a film multiple times. And of course, back then, when films were like Suspiria, for instance, released to American screens in 1977, I think, but was still in release up until 1980, and although Suspiria didn't get an alternative title, then a lot of other films did, and they were kind of, I mean, say like an example of that would be, we talked about Tower of Evil, which was released as a pretend sequel to The Fog, as Beyond the Fog in 1980.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of like tricking people, and then sort of on video as well, tricking people to watch the same movie twice.
Yeah, that's why they do the sequelitis a lot, because, you know, they pick these popular movies that people like, say, here's a sequel, and everybody's like, all right, and they're like, this has nothing to do with that film.
Yeah.
We've just been tricked.
That happened quite recently, actually. I went to see a film, I think it was called Adrift, and I think it was released in the States as Open Water 2.
Hmm. Open Water 2, Adrift.
It was a standalone movie. It was released over here as just Adrift.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But, so they are still kind of doing it. But
it's the same premise, though, isn't it? I haven't seen it.
Ish, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Okay. To conclude, Michael also says, in your last top three, Joseph mentioned about Scream also being known as The Outing. And it just got me thinking about how many films back then had different titles. Girls' Night Out was also The Scare Maker. The Prowler was also Rosemary's Killer, etc. Do you have any ideas why this happened frequently? I think we just talked about that. Thought it was quite interesting to ask.
I don't know why The Prowler was changed to Rosemary's Killer, because that was just... internationally, it was known as Rosemary's Killer, and in the States, The Prowler.
but I don't know why they changed it.
Yeah, I mean, I've got an American original movie poster under the title Rosemary's Killer as well.
Oh, so dear,
it did get a release there at some point under that title.
I would venture a guess as to the Prowler. Possibly, I could be wrong, but I'd say the Prowler is more kind of universal rather than fixating on one person like Rosemary. The Prowler just kind of says this, you know, it's about a murderer instead of, you know, one specific person being murdered. So maybe it's kind of trying to reach a more broad standing, I'd say.
Yeah, it's also quite often films filmed under one title, aren't they? And then they change the title before the release. So it could also be that a film would be sold internationally under one title, and then when it gets a domestic release, they've already changed the name, possibly. There's also sometimes there's some films that they change the name because it wouldn't resonate with an audience in those countries.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So The Prowler, I mean, it's not like The Prowler's unknown phenomenon in the UK or Ireland.
Yeah, but we don't really use that word, do we?
No, we don't really use that word. So it has more resonance or kind of to an American audience.
Actually, to be honest, we don't really use The Prowler either. We use, like, you know, people who go on people's properties like Trespasser or Peeping Tom or something like that. Mm.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm trying to think of some other examples of films where they've changed it because it wouldn't resonate with the particular audiences. But you know, I mean, for an example, you know, I mean, my book had the name changed for an American audience because they didn't think an American audience would necessarily get the meaning of the title. So
they thought it was like a book dedicated to the song Teenage Wasteland.
Yeah, possibly. There are all sorts of reasons. But yeah, no, it's an interesting question, Michael. So thank you for bringing it up. Do we have anything else? Or is it because, say, we are, this is kind of the weird time travel thing, isn't it? So Michael, you probably won't hear your feedback actually in the next episode, which will be put out before this one. So when you actually get to this one, realize...
yeah, this is just way too confusing.
Yes.
the only thing we have left to do now is, you know what?
Yep.
It's...
It's my joke of the week. It's so fantastic.
Okay, did you know that the writers of the music for Suspiria loved to visit the red light districts of Rome and Munich when they were filming? Yep, they really did love to get down and get a good goblin.
Oh, Eric. That's been recycled.
Has it?
Yeah.
Did I use that one before?
No, I think I used it and I said to Eric, do you enjoy goblin?
Well, on today's one.
Not today's.
Previous.
No.
It's just a subconscious thing, I guess.
Well, that's an obvious one. Okay, how about this one? What's Helena Marcus's favorite chewing gum?
Oh,
it's experiment.
God. Eric.
Well, I don't want to be accused of being a plagiarist.
Actually, that joke was kind of funny the more I think about it, just how bad it was.
Yeah.
Which one?
It's experiment.
Eric, you've outdone yourself.
Thank you very much.
But thank you for listening. I think we'll probably play out with a little bit more of Goblin's amazing soundtrack. And Eric. And I believe there may be a few... I did hear some singing when I was in the loo. So there might be a bit of that in there. But we are going to be back next time. And again, we've got to try and not to confuse ourselves here. But we're back with what is going to be Nathan's World of Pain Part 2.
Yes.
Hey, Nathan just walked in the door here. He wants to announce it.
Okay.
Hey, guys. Hi, Nathan.
Hi, Nathan.
Hi, I'm Nathan. I'm from the South. My next pick's going to be Hollywood's New Blood and Blood Hook.
I cannot wait.
Yeah, thank you, Nathan, for that.
Sorry, Nathan. I tried. I really tried.
It was uncanny.
Yeah, it's Hollywood's New Blood, which I don't really remember a whole lot about, except for that it may be bad, and Blood Hook.
Okay, well, I saw the first 20 minutes of Bloodhook last week, and let's just say it definitely does not star Tilda Swinton.
Or Alan Dale. Alan Dale.
In fact, I don't think it stars actors, from what I could see.
No. But also, I think it is a perfect double bill for Nathan, isn't it?
It is. I'm sure he loves both of them.
Oh, dear. Okay, right. So, well, that's coming up next time. But you have been listening to Suspiria.
Very clever. Good. Just like
that's your joke of the week. That was a good, Justin.
Oh, thank you. It wasn't meant to be a joke. But anyway, so anything to say before we sign off?
Don't forget, like maggots Suspiria. Aren't crunchy, they're slimy.
Exactly, exactly.
And Suspiria is a good film.
Yes. And don't forget that I'm a genius. Jesus.
It's Eric's joke of the weeks.
It's so fantastic.
Well, say goodbye to the good people, please.
Bye.
Goodbye, and thanks for joining us. See you next time.
Or as they say in Italia, ciao, bella.
I'm just selling stuff on eBay, so Eric's going to buy it all.
I'm not going to buy it off. I'm just curious to see what it is.
He's going to try to download it.
Who would rather read it if we had it? If we had
Eric.
It?
Justin.
Eric.
Justin.
Eric. Eric.
Oh, Justin. Boys, don't fight over it or anything.
Is this a long one?
Not too long. It's like, just kind
I of... like long ones.
I'll send it to you.
No, I don't want to read it.
That's probably Justin's vibrator.
I can only find two Werewolf of Washington's VHSs.
There is a law and it never goes out.
There is a law and it never goes out.
It never goes out.
Never goes out.
I'm Justin Kurzweil. And I've been a goth since I was 5.
Yeah.
Eric.
Yes.
Did you know that there is a light that it never goes out?
I do. It's in a graveyard somewhere, probably.
Well, you know what they say. It's better out than...
And then Eric. And she stepped on the ball.
Trading places.
Oh, you got it, didn't you?
Yep.